I don't care what anybody else thinks about you. I don't care how they think about how you look. I want my patients to be able to get dressed in the mirror 5 years after their breast cancer diagnosis, 10 years after their breast cancer diagnosis, and not constantly be reminded that they have breast cancer.
Going to the doctor is stressful. One of the biggest stresses for newly diagnosed breast cancer patients is the flurry of appointments, the information they must quickly digest, and the decisions that they have to make. One of those decisions is reconstruction. One choice is about how your body will look at the end of treatment. Dr. Julie Sprunt spends a lot of time helping women make a decision that will last a lifetime. I'm Suzanne Stone, and this is the More Than Pink podcast. A product of the strong University of Texas system, Dr. Sprunt did her fellowship in breast surgical oncology at the University of Southern California. Growing up in a family of all women, she's a passionate advocate for compassionate care. By the time a woman walks into your office, Dr. Sprunt, where is she on her breast cancer journey?
Usually when I see women in the office, they either have a mass that needs a biopsy, or they've already had their biopsy and they know that they have breast cancer, but there's still a lot of unanswered questions about what type of cancer they have and what specific treatment options there are. And so that's where I'm helpful in either obtaining a tissue diagnosis with a biopsy or helping explain the biopsy they already have and talk them through their treatment options.
So one thing that's really interesting is that you probably have to start talking about the end game before treatment has even begun, so you know where to go.
You do, and that can be somewhat challenging and overwhelming at the same time. There's a lot of if-thens. It's almost like the old choose-your-own-adventure books where you don't really know where your pathway is going to take. And so that can seem overwhelming for patients. At the same time, I think it's important to give kind of a bird's eye view of how their treatment options are likely going to play out so that they have an understanding of what they're going to be looking forward to. At the same time, there still are a lot of unknowns. So that unfortunately, there are a lot of if this, then you would do this. If this, then you would do that. And so it's important to really kind of roll with those punches as a patient and have a really good therapeutic relationship with your physicians so that you can roll with those unknowns.
So some of those unknowns are things like, am I going to have a mastectomy? Is it going to be a double? Then do I have implants? Or do I stay flat?
Absolutely. Most women, again, if we can find their cancers early enough, have the options for either lumpectomy or mastectomy. And so that's usually kind of the first branch point of decision-making. At the same time, it is important to factor in reconstructive options, especially in the setting of mastectomies. But even in the setting of lumpectomies, we can actually do what's called oncoplasty, where we use plastic surgery techniques to perform lumpectomies in a way that leaves your breast looking the same, if not better. And with mastectomy, we really rely on our plastic surgery colleagues to talk about reconstructive options, including implant-based reconstruction or using your own tissue. And that is something that's very important to factor in that initial visit when you're talking about your treatment options for your breast cancer.
So when you talk about a lumpectomy, I can only imagine, we read a lot about the size of a tumor or the size of a mass, and sometimes they're pretty small. So I'm thinking, wow, that's only the size of a pea. How when you talk about a lumpectomy, can you describe what size we're talking about when you take something like that out? I wouldn't think it would be massive in scale when you consider the size of a woman's breast.
That's true, but again, depends on the size of the cancer and depends on the size of the breast. So the analogy I like to use is, how much is $5 to you? Well, if you have $10,000 in the bank, $5 isn't that much. But if you only have $10 in the bank, $5 is a lot of money. And same goes for breast cancers. So as you alluded to, some breast cancers are quite small, the size of a pea, but some aren't. And it's important to really factor in that tumor size to breast size ratio to determine if a lumpectomy is a good option. Kind of the best candidate for a lumpectomy is somebody who has relatively large breasts with a relatively small tumor. Even if the cancer is the size of a pea, we still have to remove more breast tissue because it's very important when you remove breast cancer that you have negative margins, meaning that the cancer is not touching any of the edges of what I remove. And so because of that, you're not just removing the cancer. You're actually also removing a rim of normal tissue so that you do ensure having negative margins.
I would imagine that some women just are ready to say, just take them off. Get rid of it all. I don't want to have breast cancer ever again. And if I don't have breast tissue, then it'll all be gone.
That is very true. And that is the right answer in some patients. That being said, we have good research showing that some women, when they're originally diagnosed with breast cancer, can make fear-based decisions. And that can lead to some women really wanting bilateral mastectomies or taking them both off. And some women have regretted that decision because, when you're initially diagnosed, a lot of your calm, cool, collected decision-making factors are out the window. You are adrenaline is rushing, you are scared, and so it's challenging to really make thoughtful decisions. And that's where I think we as physicians need to be very helpful with our patients to try to help them talk through where do they want to be in 5 to 10 years and make sure that they're making thoughtful, not fear-based decisions. And again, bilateral mastectomies is the right operation for some women. However, in most women, it's probably more surgery than they need.
So I certainly can understand the fear-based decision that you're talking about. So let's say you have a patient who's not ready to make that decision. How long can they delay that decision?
So when I see patients in the office, a lot of times they need additional studies. Either they need genetic testing because they have a high-risk family history. They need genetic testing because they were young when they were diagnosed. Also, sometimes we need additional breast imaging. And that allows for time to obtain as much information as we can about a woman's breast cancer so that we can appropriately treat it. But it also allows time for patients to absorb this diagnosis and really think about all their options, talk to family members, talk to other women who've had breast cancer and who've gone through some of these treatment options to know what's best for the patient themselves. So fortunately, there is kind of a natural time window where we need to collect more information, and hopefully that allows patients time to absorb all the information, absorb all the treatment options, to make a decision that's right for them, that's not clouded in that fear-based space. At the same time, we don't want to delay the treatment of their breast cancer, but there's actually pretty good studies showing that so long as you start your treatment within 1 to 2 months of your original diagnosis, that the outcome is no different than if you were to have surgery the day after your diagnosis. So there is time to collect more information, and there is time to absorb the diagnosis and make sure that you are making the right decision for you.
So once the decision has been made that either it's a bilateral or just one breast that a patient needs to lose, what are those next steps? What are those decisions now that a patient has to make?
So if a patient is planning to get a mastectomy, one of the first questions is, as you mentioned, one side or both. And then there's actually more than one way to do a mastectomy. So the traditional way of doing a mastectomy is a simple, complete mastectomy. As you alluded to, that generally leaves patients flat. That's how almost all breast cancer operations were done until 1960. We now have more advanced techniques of doing mastectomies. So in my practice, I use skin-sparing techniques, and that's where we preserve all the skin overlying your breast but still remove the nipple and areola. And the plastic surgeon can then reconstruct a breast. The benefit to that is when you look at the breast, most of the skin is the same skin that was originally on the breast, and it looks like a more natural-appearing breast. The alternative to that is a nipple-sparing mastectomy, which is where we actually preserve the skin as well as the nipple and areola. And again, the benefit of that is when you look down, and it looks very similar to the breast that you had prior to surgery. And so that usually is kind of the next step. if women plan to undergo skin sparing or nipple sparing mastectomies, that's usually done in conjunction with a plastic surgeon. And so the next step really also is meeting with a plastic surgeon and deciding about what type of reconstruction you want, either implant-based reconstruction or what's called autologous reconstruction, which is where we use your own tissue to recreate a breast.
There are a lot of choices that a patient has to make there.
There are. As I say, sometimes the best part about breast cancer is you have options, and sometimes the worst part about breast cancer is you have options, because it can seem very overwhelming. That being said, if you look at the breast cancer operations we were doing before 1960, every woman got the same operation, and they were extremely disfigured, and women really... that was troublesome. They had a lower sense of satisfaction. They didn't feel as confident looking at themselves in the mirror. They didn't feel as much like a woman. And so, again, I think it's extremely advantageous that we have all of these options, but admittedly, it can seem very overwhelming.
Are any of those challenges that you have around these choices have to do with screening? So hopefully and ideally, the woman has caught her cancer early enough and she's going to, you know, be able to live a healthy, long life. And so what happens from a screening perspective, and what are some of the challenges around screening based on some of these choices that she has to make?
Yeah, so I mean, the beauty of screening is it allows us to find cancers usually at an earlier stage. So it improves outcomes overall, has been shown to save lives over and over again, but also allows for women to have options. Because if we find it early enough, then they have options for lumpectomy or mastectomy. Now, once they've been treated going forward, screening options do vary a little bit. So in women who have mastectomies, screening mammograms are no longer routinely recommended because, in theory, all of their breast tissue has been removed. That being said, they do require and benefit from clinical breast exams every 6 months to a year, meaning somebody who takes care of breast cancer needs to examine their breasts, because even after bilateral mastectomies, women still can get breast cancer. Now, women who've had lumpectomies, then generally their screening is similar to what it was before, and that we still will continue to get mammograms on an annual basis. The caveat to all of that is there are other ways that we can screen breasts. And it's important, really, to talk to your doctor about your family history, your overall lifetime risk of developing breast cancer, because if your lifetime risk of developing breast cancer is over 20%, then you may benefit also from screening breast MRIs or screening breast ultrasounds.
So, again, lots of choices, but really good ones, kind of based on what this initial decision about reconstruction really looks like.
Absolutely. And that's where I think it's so important to find a treatment team and a group of doctors who you have a really trusting relationship with, because it can seem like there's so much information out there and there are so many options. And I think it's important for patients to find a group of people and a group of physicians who they think is giving them sound counsel and sound advice to help them navigate all of these options.
Many years ago, I remember when breast cancer or when breast implants became a thing, that we heard a lot about, oh, implants cause cancer and you shouldn't have them. You've got to take them out. They're leaking. I'm sure that's not what we're doing anymore. Yes?
That is true. So the concern is there are some forms of implants that, or there's a very rare type of implant-associated lymphoma. And the reports of lymphomas associated with these implants are exceedingly rare. However, it is a very aggressive form of breast cancer. And that is mostly associated with textured implants. And for that reason, most plastic surgeons no longer use textured implants. At the same time, implants can rupture. And if you have an implant that has silicone within it and that implant ruptures, then you can develop masses in your breast and also even in your lymph nodes with silicone in them. And that can be challenging to follow over time. But for the most part, implants are perfectly safe. And the recommendation is that we just follow them closely to ensure that you don't have any abnormalities that can be suspicious for some of these very rare forms of cancer.
I would also think there's a quality of life issue at hand, too. It's not just about, certainly it's about the cancer coming back or making a decision that somehow impacts that, you know, your longevity, but also an emotional health has to play a role in this as well.
Absolutely. And that's what, again, we learned from pre-1960. I mean, I think that we undervalued women's sense of self. And when I see all of my patients in the office, I tell them, listen, I don't care what anybody else thinks about you. I don't care how they think about how you look. I want my patients to be able to get dressed in the mirror 5 years after their breast cancer diagnosis, 10 years after their breast cancer diagnosis, and not constantly be reminded that they have breast cancer. And that's where I think cosmetic concerns and reconstruction are important to consider. Under no circumstances would I ever make a treatment decision that would compromise the cancer care just so that they would look good. But a lot of times we can actually treat their cancer in a way that leaves their breast looking the same, if not better, so that when they are getting dressed in the mirror, they're not constantly reminded of, oh, that was from when I had breast cancer, and they're not constantly feeling like their body looks worse because of the fact that they had cancer. And I think that's really, really important as surgeons that we value that goal.
Absolutely. Now, I know there are many women who opt not to do implants after a bilateral mastectomy. What can you talk a little bit about what that decision feels like or sounds like, and why the decision to go flat is made sometimes?
You know, I think it's a personal decision. And some women don't want to go through the process of breast reconstruction because it is a process. And also, with any surgical process, you know, the more we do surgically, the more at risk you are to have complications. And some women, that's just not the right answer for them. And I think going flat is a really good option for women who aren't interested in reconstruction. And it certainly has gained a lot of more recent popularity. And, you know, every year in Breast Cancer Awareness Month, usually they'll go on the Today Show, and there is a group of women who really campaign and advocate for going flat. And I think it's a really good option, so long as that's okay with you personally. And I actually have several patients who have gone flat, and I mean, they really rock going flat. One of whom actually is a drummer, and she'll drum without her shirt on because she doesn't have breasts anymore. And I think that's awesome. But some women wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. And so, again, I think it's just a very personal decision. But I think going flat is, you know, I think it's a great option.
Once they make a decision like that, is there an option to go back later? And if they change their minds?
There is. So certainly you can go flat, and at any point if you decide to have reconstruction at a later date, you can do that. The cosmetic results are not as good. So if you are not wearing clothes, it is not as cosmetic than if we did the reconstruction at the same time as the mastectomy. At the same time, if you're wearing clothes, you look almost the exact same if you have delayed reconstruction versus immediate.
Does age play a factor in any of these decisions at all? From a reconstruction standpoint?
To a certain extent. Sometimes we do reconstruction in a way where we use women's own tissue. Actually, we can take abdominal fat, which somewhat facilitates a tummy tuck, and move that abdominal fat into breast to recreate breast. That's a long, more invasive operation. And so, you know, if you're getting above the age of 75 or 80, that may not be the wisest reconstruction option just because the duration of surgery and the invasiveness of it is probably more risky than it is beneficial in that particular patient population. Otherwise, I mean, we have older women who get breast implants if they want. Certainly, you don't have to get a breast implant. You can go flat, and they make breast prostheses, which is basically a fake breast that you put in a bra. And then when you're wearing clothes, it looks like you have a breast.
Which is a better option, certainly, if you've only done one side.
Absolutely.
So, worst case scenario, you go through this process and you are You have no breast cancer, you've finished treatment, you've done reconstructive surgery, and 4, 5, 6 years down the road, it's back. Perhaps you're metastatic, or, you know, tissues found or breast cancer's found on the other side. Mm-hmm. How does that impact what you've done already from a reconstruction side?
So it can be a little bit tricky in that setting. Really, it kind of depends on a lot of different variables. That being said, you're not burning any bridges by doing reconstruction, meaning if you have a recurrence that is aggressive and we need to do more breast surgery, if you have an implant in, we can take out that implant and treat your breast cancer however we need to treat it, and then do reconstruction at a later time. And alternatively, if you've had autologous reconstruction or where we use your own tissue, then again, we can always remove that tissue if we need to in order to appropriately treat your breast cancer.
So you've got us covered.
We have got you covered. And study after study has shown that reconstruction is safe. And does it make the planning around recurrent breast cancer a little bit more complex? Yes. But I don't think it compromises in any way your outcomes if you were to have a recurrence after undergoing breast reconstruction.
Do you see, or are there any studies that talk about or have shown that there is a higher level of recurrence for women who have reconstruction? Does it impact, you know, does it impact that recurrence rate at all?
It does not. The reconstruction itself does not increase your risk for developing recurrent breast cancer. The challenge of reconstruction is that sometimes breast cancers can hide in a reconstructed breast. At the same time, and again, that's where it's very important to see a really good breast cancer surgeon who will follow you over your lifetime to ensure that if you do have a recurrent breast cancer, we find it early. And if you are getting clinical breast exams, a lot of times when women recur, it is on the anterior surface of their breast, which leads to a mass that you can feel, abnormal skin findings, and those can be detected on breast exam, independent of reconstruction.
So what advice would you have for perhaps a patient early stage who is listening to the podcast today, somebody who's just been diagnosed, someone who is just listening to learn about all of these options from the fire hose, so to speak? What kind of advice would you give her?
What I would say is focus on the fact that survival of women when they're first diagnosed with breast cancer is excellent. Most women who are diagnosed, we have caught it early. It is small. Take time to find a doctor that you feel is going to guide you through this in a way that you trust them. Really listen to all of your options. Realize that everybody's going to tell you about their own personal story with breast cancer, about people they know story with breast cancer, and realize that's not necessarily your story because every breast cancer is different. And it's important to make sure that you really understand your diagnosis, your specific treatment options, and that you talk with your friends and family to make the right decision for you.
There are likely few moments in life more emotionally charged than the one sitting in an oncologist office hearing you have breast cancer. In those moments, so many decisions must be made, ones that will impact you for a lifetime. To build them back or go flat, it's great to know that regardless of your choice, your cancer care won't suffer. A big thank you to iHeartMedia for making each and every one of these great podcasts happen. Thanks, Mike, our studio technician, for putting all of our pieces together. To our Komen Austin team, who makes everything happen behind the scenes, and to our donors, who save lives every single day by investing in the work that we do. Susan G. Komen Austin is an affiliate of Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. If you need resources, information, or just have a comment about this or any of our episodes, reach out. You can find us at podcast@komenaustin.org and visit us at komenaustin.org. Thanks for listening and for sharing a few minutes of your time with us today. We'll talk to you next time. And until then, be more than pink.